I want to begin with a word of explanation. I've drawn the details of this message from many sources and will not be able, as I preach, to give credit everywhere as I would like to do so. This is a message, not a research paper. And so you'll understand that as I go along. More than 20 years ago now, I received a telephone call and a lady asked if she could come in and seek my counsel. I set up an appointment and remember her coming in to my little office at our old church building. She sat down across from me and her little 3-year-old girl sat briefly in the chair next to her. It wasn't long before the cute little girl was out of her seat and on the floor and everywhere. Then she's standing at her mama's knee. Then she's looking over my bookcase. Then she's looking over a couple of my books. Then she's trying to leave the office. Then she was trying to climb my desk. Then she was trying to open the drawers on my desk. Then she was in her mama's lap. Then she was trying to talk to her mama. I mean, it was just nonstop action. And in the middle of it all, this lady started pouring out her problem. As best I remember, she was out of work and they weren't making it financially. It was all that they could do to survive. And to top it all off, she'd recently found out that she was pregnant. She and her husband had talked about it and decided the best thing they could do would be for her to get an abortion. Other folks were also encouraging her that direction. She was pretty sure that she was going to do it. In fact, when she left my office, I still wasn't sure whether she was going to abort her baby or not. The fetus was still very small. She had felt no movement. Most people didn't even know she was pregnant. She had been told that at this point the fetus was just a glob of tissue that a careful doctor would scrape away and that would be it. And she looked at me and she said, "Pastor Davis, what do you think?" Psalm chapter 139, verse 7, if you'll follow along, please. "Whither shall I go from thy spirit?" Or, "Whither shall I flee from thy presence?" You can't get away from God no matter where you are, no matter who you are. "If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me." You know, what he's saying is that there's nowhere you can go to get away from God, that God continually sees everybody all the time. "If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me." In other words, no matter where you go to hide, you could go to hide in an abortion clinic, hope no one saw you there, God would still see you there. "Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee." Do you realize that God sees the baby as brightly and as clearly in the mother's womb as He sees you and me if we're walking around in the bright noonday sunlight? "For thou hast possessed my reins." It's talking about how God is the one who made the organs of our body. "Thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret." God sees the little one in secret in the womb. "And curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth." It's talking about the place of darkness and mystery. Of all the scientific advances we have, we still don't begin to understand everything taking place in a mother's womb. "Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned, when as yet there was none of them. How precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God. How great is the sum of them." God is thinking about every living human being this morning. He's thinking about the unborn babies in their mother's wombs here this morning. And He's thinking about you and me. "If I should count them, the thoughts God has, they are more in number than the sand. When I awake, I am still with thee." I want to speak to you this morning on the subject, innocent blood or God's viewpoint on abortion. January 22nd, 1973. It has been called Black Monday, a day that will live in infamy. It is arguably our nation's most infamous, sad day. Before that date, most states had statutes that either made abortion a crime or at least placed restrictions on abortion. But on that date, the Supreme Court of the United States of America ruled that if a developing human baby was only a, quote, potential life. Roe versus Wade gave to women the right to abort their unborn babies. On that same day, Doe versus Bolton prohibited states from requiring that abortions be performed in licensed hospitals, thus opening the floodgates for freestanding abortion clinics. In a 7-2 Supreme Court decision, the court did what the court really, truly did not have the right to do constitutionally. They created new law that had not existed before in the United States or in the history of the world. Even the liberal United Nations passed a Human Rights Declaration in 1959, which had the following resolution in it. The child, by reason of its physical and mental immaturity, needs special safeguards and care, including legal protection before as well as after birth. When I was a boy growing up in the 50s and 60s, if you had mentioned the word abortion, I would have had absolutely no idea what you were talking about, and most others my age would not have had any idea what you were talking about either. The word itself was like a dirty word that was seldom, if ever, used in public. In fact, I was reading this week where they can go back and tell you the very first time it was even publicly used on television in a program. I believe it was 1973 or right before that when that happened. Now, my outline for this message is simply to ask and then answer several questions. My first question is this: what are the abortion statistics? Where are we as far as abortion is concerned? It has now been 30 years since 1973. What are the results? On September the 11th, 2001, there were 3,031 people killed in the terrorist attacks on America. New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani described the nearly 3,000 lost in the World Trade Center in one morning as, quote, more than we can bear. The attack on Pearl Harbor on December the 7th, 1941, killed 2,403 Americans. Yet on a daily basis, approximately 3,836 unborn babies have their lives violently ended under the protection of law. That's 5 babies every 2 minutes. About 160 every hour, 1.4 million or more per year. We have 420 crosses on the lawn of our church today representing 42 million babies. Each cross out there represents 100,000 babies who have lost their lives. That is the population of Springfield, Illinois, 420 times. Actually, the Alan Guttmacher Institute says the total is probably about 43,358,592 abortions. Let me picture for you in relation to the population of the United States how many that really is. According to the 2000 census, that number equals the current population of 19 states of the United States. Arkansas, Connecticut, Hawaii, Idaho, Iowa, Kansas, Maine, Mississippi, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Oregon, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Utah, and West Virginia. It sends chills over me as I say how many states that many people represents. And that is just America. Because of our influence and our acceptance of this horrible thing, abortion has been encouraged and expanded around the globe. It's interesting to compare the number of American war casualties to the number of abortions. There were 25,324 Americans known killed in the Revolutionary War casualties of war battles. There were 498,332 Americans killed in the Civil War, our bloodiest war of history. There were 116,708 Americans killed in World War I. There were 407,316 Americans killed in World War II. There were 54,246 Americans killed in the Korean War and 58,655 Americans killed in the Vietnam War. The total of all of those is less than 1.2 million. More babies are aborted in 1 year in America than all of the men and women who were killed in all of America's bloodiest wars. In fact, the total number of all the casualties in World War II was about 1.2 million, which is about the number, actually it's less than the number killed in 1 year in America in relation to abortion. Not only what are the abortion statistics, let me ask secondly, what is the world's justification for abortion? How did we get to this point? How was that which had previously been a criminal felony changed into a permissible action overnight? What if tomorrow the Supreme Court were to rule that newborn babies were not really human beings for the first week of their lives and they could be put to death? How would we feel about that? That which is now considered murder, what if it was suddenly turned into the protected area of law overnight? It has all taken place because of confusion in relation to one simple question. When does human life begin? Is it at birth, at conception, or at some time in between? Do human beings come from embryos, or were all human beings once living embryos? If a baby is not alive, then why does he need to be aborted at all? Is a fetus a potential human being or a human being with potential? Those who favor abortion have allowed themselves to think and have conditioned others to think the unborn are not really human beings. A lady doctor from Missouri said this, "We are dealing with embryonic tissues. We're not dealing with a fetus or a baby. I don't feel like I'm a murderer or a killer. At 6 to 10 weeks, it's just a mass of tissues." Almost any time you hear an abortionist speaking on the subject, they will refer to the unborn as a fetus or a product of conception. To them, the baby is not a human being. He or she is a thing, a non-person. The mother is a person. The fetus is a thing. The third question I would ask this morning is this. Are there Bible verses that clearly show that God views the unborn as living human beings? We looked at several just a moment ago. Psalm 139 verse 15, "My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth," saying God saw me. David saying, "I was a human being when I was made in the darkness of my mother's womb. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written." And that means that God had plans for every human being from the time they are conceived in the womb, which in contentious were fashioned when as yet there was none of them. "How precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God. How great is the sum of them." God thinks not only about you and me. He is thinking thoughts right now about the unborn babies in this auditorium and what His plans are for their lives. David said, "While I was still in the womb, you knew all about me." Those who favor abortion don't think like God thinks. They think a mother and a glob. God thinks two people, two human beings, and I have plans for both of their lives. Certainly one is more dependent for existence on the other, but both need each other. The baby needs the mother needs the baby. Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, said, "The most merciful thing that the large family does to one of its infant members is to kill it." In Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5, God says, notice the contrast between what she said, what God says, "Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. And before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee, and I ordained thee a prophet unto the nations." Does that sound like a non-person to you? The prophet Isaiah said in chapter 49, verse 1, "The Lord hath called me from the womb, from the bowels of my mother hath He made mention of my name." Listen to me today. Before a single person here was ever born, God knew who you were and had laid out for you a plan in life. And if you follow that plan, your life's going to be wonderful. Certainly it's true that people do wrong. People make mistakes. But under the sovereignty of God, there is no such thing as a life that is a mistake. One of my favorite passages of Scripture is Luke chapter 1, verse 41 through 44. "And it came to pass that when Elizabeth heard the salutation of Mary, the babe leaped in her womb, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Ghost. And she spake out with a loud voice and said, Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb. And whence is this to me that the mother of my Lord should come to me? For lo, as soon as the voice of thy salutation sounded in mine ears, the babe leaped in my womb for joy." A baby leaped for joy in his mother's womb. Sure. Why not? I remember my unborn baby girls kicking me. I remember feeling the form of their body before they were born. Doctors in recent years have discovered that unborn children suck their thumbs, respond to light, move when tickled, can keep time to a timpani drum. And they have now proven that learning takes place in the womb of the unborn child while he is still in the womb. An article from 1984, a researcher had expectant mothers begin reading aloud about 6 weeks before the baby was due. Each day the women, who all experienced normal pregnancies, read a Dr. Seuss story. They only read at a time when they thought their unborn baby was in a wakeful state. After birth, the babies were tested in a special bassinet equipped with an artificial nipple to suck on and earphones for listening to tape recordings. A nearby computer played various recordings to the infants while researchers measured the amount of sucking the baby did in response to the tapes. Tests revealed the newborns showed a preference for, they sucked more during, tapes of their mother reading the story they heard before birth rather than tapes of their mother reading other Dr. Seuss stories. Women who had never recited a story to their unborn babies delivered infants who had no preference for the Dr. Seuss stories. These mothers had already created an appetite for something in their unborn babies before they were ever born. And so that's the reason you should read the Bible to your unborn babies. That's the reason you should pray to your unborn baby. That's the reason, Dad, you should put your hand on your on mom's womb and touch the baby as closely as you can and speak to the baby and tell the baby who you are, because that baby is learning already. I remember with my oldest grandson, I believe it was, how one day he was really just active in the womb, kicking his mama and thrashing around. How many of you ladies ever experienced anything like that? Just wouldn't settle down. And his dad walked over, placed his hand on mother's womb, and spoke and said, "You settle down in there now." And he did. Is that a non-person? Is that a glob of tissue? In Chicago, just a few weeks ago, now, a lady gave birth to a baby, put the baby in a plastic bag, and put it outside in a dumpster. She was caught, arrested, has been charged with first-degree murder, was being held, if I remember right, on a $750,000 bond. And yet, that mother, if she had had a partial birth abortion where that baby was killed while it was exiting the womb by a doctor, nobody would have said a single thing. Nothing would have been done at all. We, in some ways, folks, are a schizophrenic society. We are not making a lick of sense out of that which is justice. And there are those who say, well, you folks are pro-life. You just need to let this go by. We're not the ones who started this. We're the ones who must stand up and say this cannot go on. An unborn child is genetically unique the moment of conception. His heart begins to beat at 18 to 21 days after conception. By the sixth week, the adrenal gland and thyroid are functioning. 8 weeks after conception, all bodily systems are present, and the baby's fingerprints are beginning to form by the 12th week, and the mark of God is upon the baby. In the last few weeks, a phenomenal thing has begun to happen that could well change in a big way the abortion climate in America. A major company has come out with 4D, four-dimensional images, they call it, of the baby in the womb. And when they show this to mothers, it over 60% of mothers, if they were even thinking about having an abortion, say they can't have an abortion after that because they can see their unborn baby in the womb. In the Bible, it is not a zygote, then a fetus, and then a baby. The same. Listen to this. This, in my opinion, is the strongest biblical argument against abortion. And after all, folks, it's what God says, not what we think. The same Greek word, brephos, is used to refer to an unborn child and also used to refer to the baby Jesus in the manger and also used to refer to a little boy. There was Luke 1:44. The babe leaped in my womb for joy. The word babe there is brephos. Luke 2:12, you shall find the babe, that's brephos, wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. Do you see it? Here's a baby in the womb. God uses the same word for the baby in the womb and also for the baby in the manger. Luke 18:15, they brought unto him also infants that he would touch them. And the word infants, here's these little children they're bringing to Jesus. That's the Greek word brephos. And in 2 Timothy 3:15, from a child thou hast known the Holy Scriptures, talking about Timothy, as a little boy had known the Holy Scriptures. There are four pictures there. And the Greek word is used the same for all four of those pictures. Look at the pictures. When a young pastor and his wife from a nearby church had a baby stillborn, I went to the graveside service. When I was called on to speak, I mentioned that the body in the casket was more than a fetus. His was the body of a human being. And the young pastor came up and thanked me and said, Brother Davis, you don't know how much that meant. The hospital wanted to dispose of the body, and I told them, no, I'm going to bury my baby. Whether the world believes it or not, the child my daughter carries in her womb today is just as much her and her husband's child as any of our other four children and just as much alive. That's the reason that about 8 months ago now, when she was expecting and she had a miscarriage, then we all grieved and we had a little memorial service to remember that little life. The pregnant lady sitting in my office said to me, Pastor Davis, what do you think? Is it all right for me to get an abortion? Now, folks, you have to understand before I tell you what I told her, that I really didn't want her to do what I said. I wanted to shock her back into reality. I had the little girl leave the room. I opened my desk drawer and pulled out this old German dagger. And I said, I held it up and I said, ma'am, if you feel you can't handle or afford two children, I suggest you kill the little girl that's been running around in the room here. The lady was shocked. I said, really, ma'am, in God's sight, both children are living human beings. It wouldn't be as much trouble to take the life of this one running around the room as it would be the unborn child. Then you can just have the baby and start over again. She said, you don't mean that. I said, you're right. But in God's sight, either life you take is murder. Either one. That's not the end of the story. When she left the room, I still wasn't sure I had really gotten through. Exodus 21, 22, and 23 has been used by some people to justify abortion. In reality, it is one of the strongest pro-life passages in all the Word of God. Listen to it. If men strive and hurt a woman with child so that her fruit depart from her, and yet no mischief follow, he shall be surely punished, according as the woman's husband will lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. And if any mischief follow, then thou shalt give life for life. Some interpret verse 22 to mean that if the lady miscarries, that the man who caused it pays a fine, and that's it. But the phrase, her fruit depart, does not use the Hebrew word referring to miscarriage. Her fruit depart is the word for a normal delivery. This man has caused a premature delivery and has to at least pay a fine for doing so. But if either the baby or the mother die, God demanded life for life. If this man struck this woman with this child, and either she or the baby died, God said, it's life for life. It is eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. I'll tell in a little while about a little girl who was, the doctor botched the abortion and pulled her right arm off. Biblically, that doctor should have lost his right arm. Years ago, I spoke at a pro-life rally and I said this, very often what man is for, God is against. I'm convinced beyond any doubt whatsoever that God is against abortion. Man calls the unborn a fetus. God calls the unborn a child. Man calls the abortionist a friend. God calls him a fiend. Man calls the act of abortion the termination of a pregnancy. God calls it the destruction of a life. Man calls it a woman's right. God calls it a baby's death. Man calls it law and justice. God sees it as lawlessness and injustice. Man calls it moral. God calls it murder. I like what President Ronald Reagan said. He said, I noticed that everyone who is for abortion has already been born. Question number four. Why should we know that abortion is wrong even if we didn't have or didn't believe the Bible? See, there are a lot of people who don't have a Bible, a lot of people who don't believe the Bible. I want to tell you something. Whether you believe the Bible or not, you should know that abortion is wrong. Listen to this next statement. Sound human logic always lines up with scriptural truth. That's the reason Isaiah 1:18 says, come now and let us reason together, saith the Lord. Let's ask this question. Can a thing, can a blob learn in the womb? I told one story a while ago. Here's another one. A mother in Oklahoma City discovered that her one-year-old daughter was reciting breathing instructions for a Lamaze childbirth. But the terminology and technology were clearly Canadian, not American. The mother had taken Lamaze while living in Toronto, Canada, more than a year earlier. Her daughter had learned that those classes in the womb and was reciting them back. Tim Bailey said this, if a hunter is out looking for a deer and sees something moving in the trees, he won't think it's either a deer or a human being and then shoot. It is up to him to be sure it's a deer before he shoots, or he could wind up in court for manslaughter. There are hunters here today. Surely, you don't go hunting, and if you just see some movement, you just start shooting. If you do that, I don't want to go hunting with you. Isn't it logical that if we don't know exactly when a child becomes a living soul, a human being, we don't just go ahead and terminate the life on the chance it might not be human yet. You don't shoot in movement whether you... And you see something over there, you're just going to go ahead and shoot and you're not really sure whether it's life or not. No, if you're not sure, you don't pull the trigger. I'm saying we should know abortion's wrong even if we don't have a Bible or don't believe the Bible. I have an article entitled, Abortionist Cannot View Film of His Own Work. Dr. Bernard Nathanson once ran the Western world's largest abortion clinic. He personally performed about 5,000 abortions and was responsible for 25,000 more before his position changed And more recently, he produced a film that shows in detail what abortion does to a fetus. Pro-life literature usually shows photos of the fetus after it's been killed. Nathanson's film used sonographic filming techniques, and you can see the outline of the child in the womb thrashing about in order to avoid the abortionist. The physician who performed the abortion, filmed by Dr. Nathanson, started to watch the film that was made after it was made and ran out of the studio and never performed another abortion. Scientific evidence says there's no doubt whatsoever that that unborn baby feels pain and probably terror. The nervous system is in place about 8 weeks after conception and develops rapidly. In the year 2000, there was a major outcry across the United States from doctors calling for unborn fetuses to be anesthetized so they wouldn't feel pain before being aborted. Now, isn't that amazing? They're not human. They're not alive. But if you're going to take their life, if you're going to abort them, you've got to anesthetize them first because they feel pain. Where is our thinking? I'm saying we should know that this is wrong with or without a Bible. How? Because there are so many people alive right now who doctors tried to abort. John DeHass is a Korean boy whose life was miraculously spared when he survived a suction abortion. Jenna Jensen speaks against abortion after miraculously surviving a saline abortion. She has forgiven her birth mother and calls aborted babies her special friends. Jenna has cerebral palsy from being without air so long because of the process the abortionist tried to use. An abortionist missed on a little girl the first time, then asked the mother for a second shot, and the mother said, "No way," and gave birth to a perfectly healthy, beautiful little girl named Lauren. Now, how can you have a baby if this wasn't a baby before? A New York girl named Anna Rosa Rodriguez survived a 1991 abortion minus her right arm. Question number five. Isn't there any legitimate reason to justify abortion? I referred a moment ago to Dr. Bernard Nathanson. He wrote in his first book after he stopped doing abortions this. He said, "We proposed a lengthy list of illnesses, including but not limited to heart or kidney disease, which would justify abortion. We regard that list now with a growing sense of disbelief. If women with heart and liver transplants can be carried successfully through pregnancy, we can no longer conceive of any medical condition which would legitimize abortion. In short, we have slowly evolved to an unshakable posture of no exceptions." A wise person wrote this, "Even if there were a case in which an abortion was necessary to save the life of the mother, abortion should not be allowed. If two people are on a one-man raft in the middle of the ocean, the law does not permit one to throw the other overboard to save his own life. Otherwise, might would make right. In maternity cases, the duty of the doctor is to use his best efforts to save both the patients, the mother and the child. In fact, that's been a part of the Hippocratic Oath that doctors have taken to protect the lives of unborn babies for many, many years. He should not be given a license to intentionally kill either one of them. It is conceivable that in a surgery to try to save a mother's life, an unborn baby might lose his life. That is still not the same as deliberately targeting and aborting the baby himself. Often the issue of abortion is clouded by other emotional issues. Somebody says, well, a woman should have the right to control her own life. In a word, she does. It takes a word ahead of time where she looks at the other person and says, no. But it needs to be said before she gets pregnant. Somebody else says, well, how about in cases of rape? 1987 statistics say that 1% of abortions were performed for that reason. But the Bible has an even better answer for that than abortion. In Deuteronomy 22, 25 to 27, the law demanded that the rapist be put to death. But unto the damsel thou shalt do nothing. There is in the damsel no sin worthy of death. What a twisted travesty of law and justice when we allow a rapist to live and condemn an innocent child to death. The baby has done nothing wrong. Nothing at all. In fact, there are ads being put up, posters being put up on college campuses now asking a picture of a lady. Her name is Rebecca. She's a lovely young lady just looking at the college student. She looks like she's about 20 years old. And the question below her picture is, did I deserve the death penalty? She was conceived in rape and invites readers to reconsider their support for abortion in rape cases because she's glad she is alive and feels like it would have been wrong to kill her. It was not her fault that she was conceived by the process of rape. You say, but I couldn't raise the child. For many years now, there have been far more parents wanting to adopt babies than there are enough babies to adopt. Some of the most delightful children in our church today, they're here this morning, all over the auditorium, several, are children who were adopted. In fact, they and their parents, their families, some of the finest people I've ever known, some of the most committed Christians, parents and adopted children. What a blessing! Some have babies aborted because they're afraid he or she will be handicapped or deformed. But the Bible talks about how God makes all of us. In the book of John, it talked about how this man born blind was born that way so that others could see the glory of God. 27-year-old Susan Green of Manchester, England, had her baby aborted in her 27th week of pregnancy because doctors said she was too deformed to live. But to everyone's horror, tests that had indicated a severe deformity were wrong. Susan's baby was perfect, and after it had been snatched from her womb, it faced a frightful fight for life. She said, I wanted to kill the doctors. If I'd had a gun, I would have pulled the trigger, then turned the gun on myself. I'd let them abort my baby, my first baby, the baby my husband Arthur and I longed for, the baby that took us 2 years to conceive. They had told us it was deformed, that it would not survive birth, and that without the abortion I could suffer irreversible damage and ruin the chance of any babies in the future. But the doctors were wrong. All their modern equipment was wrong. My baby was perfect. And now my perfect little girl was waging what looked like a losing fight for life because I had consented to an abortion. I was plagued with the thought that if she died, we would have killed an innocent baby. I felt so bitter toward the doctors, but I couldn't forgive myself for listening to them. I prayed to God to let my baby live, and He answered my prayers. She just wouldn't die. She wanted to live. If my baby had died, I would have ended up in a mental institution. I would have committed suicide. What Susan almost faced, many other mothers have faced. Dr. Margaret White of England stated that out of 1,000 attempted suicides, 9 times as many women who tried to kill themselves had had abortions as compared with other women in the general population. Question number 6. What answers could we give to the pro-abortionist arguments? There are several of them. You've heard them. A mother has a right to control her own body. But the baby is not part of the mother's body. He or she has his own body. To be sure, the mother is feeding the unborn baby, but does a mother have a right to stop feeding her baby before or after he is born? How about this? Babies, they say, are not conscious, personal human beings. Does that mean that you and I are not human beings when we're asleep? Because we're not always conscious then either. You've heard this phrase. This is Planned Parenthood's favorite phrase. Every child a wanted child. You know what I'd like to say to them? Let's finish the sentence. Every child a wanted child, so let's learn to want and love every child God makes. What they really mean by the statement, every child a wanted child, is this: an unwanted child should be killed. That's what they really mean. The argument, every child has a right to a meaningful life. So if we take away the chance he has to live this life, does that mean he's going to get another chance for a meaningful, more meaningful one later on? Who is to decide whose life is meaningful and who isn't? Every person's life is meaningful if they will make it meaningful. I was reading last night a story about a young man who was, I think they call him a savant. He was severely mentally retarded, could barely do hardly any of the things, but he could walk, he could move. One day, when he was, a teenager, his mother walked into the room and heard him playing a major concerto piece on the piano. And the doctor said, he is a miracle child. Now, he is severely mentally retarded, but his mind is like a computer that as soon as he hears a piece of music with no training whatsoever on the piano, he was able to walk over and play that piece perfectly, and his mind continues to do that, and many people have been blessed by that. Are we to say that was not a meaningful life? Are we to say that God made some kind of mistake there? You've heard the story of the two doctors. One said to the other, I want your opinion of the termination of a pregnancy. The father is syphilitic. The mother is tuberculous. Of the four children already born to them, the first was blind, the second one was born dead, the third one was born deaf and dumb, and the fourth one, tuberculous. What would you have done? And the second doctor said, well, I would have ended that pregnancy. Then said the first, you would have murdered Beethoven. Besides poverty and unhappiness, Beethoven's own health was never very good. He suffered from rheumatism, indigestion, weak eyes, dropsy, and in his 32nd year, the most crushing blow of all, he lost his hearing. Yet Beethoven's life was precious. He wrote to a friend and said, I will take fate by the throat. It shall not wholly overcome me. Oh, it is so beautiful to live 1,000 times. I feel I'm not made for a quiet life. He felt that happiness, too, was not for him. Happiness, he said, is not intended for me, or rather, I am not intended for happiness. I've been put into the world not to enjoy a pleasant life, but to accomplish a great work for God. Out of pain and suffering, Beethoven brought forth masterpieces in music because that have blessed the world, because his mother brought him into the world. There's the argument, it's better to have an aborted child than an abused one. Don't they realize abortion is the very worst form of child abuse imaginable? You can't choose between those two. There are those who say, well, you cannot legislate morality. Then we ought to take all the laws off the books. Because every law in the books legislates morality. If it says thou shalt not kill, if it says thou shalt not steal, whatever it says, it's a legislation of morality. Well, we have to do this to stop overpopulation. Overpopulation is a myth. Man's selfishness and greed is the problem. The wars in the world and the self-centeredness of man, that is the problem. There's plenty of food to feed the whole world and plenty of room for the whole world. Everybody in the world. Well, people are going to have abortions anyway, so we need to legalize them. Legalizing wrong won't ever make it right. Let's ask this one. How is abortion like slavery, but worse than slavery? I want to tell you that the parallels between abortion and the slavery in America of the 1800s, the parallels are astounding. Slavery was established by the Dred Scott decision of 1857. The Supreme Court, in a 7-2 decision, declared that a black man was not a real person. Roe versus Wade, 1973, also a 7-2 decision of the Supreme Court, declared that the unborn are not persons. Slavery, this slave is the property of his owner. He can be bought, sold, or killed. Nothing anybody can do. And they argued that the abolitionists should not impose their morality on the slave owner, and therefore slavery was legal and could not be stopped. Took the blood of the Civil War to cleanse our nation. And I want to tell you, abortion is worse than slavery. When we say that the baby is the property of the mother, she can choose to keep it or kill it, that the pro-lifers should not impose their morality on others and abortion should be legal. Stephen Douglas, who debated with Abraham Lincoln, in July 9th, 1858, said this, "Slavery preserves, quote, not only the purity of blood, but the purity of the government from any mixture or amalgamation with inferior races." And the National Abortion Rights Action League says this, "Deformed births are shattering to the mother, child, family, and society. Only legal abortion can prevent them." The argument for slavery, although he's biologically human, a slave is not a person and therefore has no legal rights. And the argument is, although by the end of the second month of his existence, the unborn human is biologically completely formed, he's not a person, therefore has no legal rights. And the argument, a man's property is private concern. No one else is to interfere. And the argument for abortion is that a woman's property is her private concern. No one else is to interfere. And the argument that slavery protected the slave from the cruelties of the world, and abortion supposedly protects the unborn child from being unwanted and stops child abuse. Can I tell you something? Listen to me. Abortion is not the same as slavery. Abortion is worse than slavery. If anyone should be up in the air about the abortion issue, it should be the black population. Because their population is being decimated more than any other race in America by abortion. They are being cut back. All slaves were not tortured and executed. Aborted babies experienced both. Some slaves were able to defend themselves or at least run. Unborn babies can do neither. Question number 8. What are the consequences for a nation that refuses to stop shedding, quote, innocent blood? I typed into my Bible on computer, innocent blood. I was shocked what came up. 19 times it occurs in the Bible. I challenge you to read them and study every one of them and notice the principles there. I won't be able to give it all to you. In the first occurrence, God pronounces judgment on a land that sheds innocent blood. Deuteronomy 19:10, "That innocent blood be not shed in thy land, which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance, and so blood be upon thee." Israel's. Do you notice that? The blood will be upon you if the innocent blood is shed in your land. Israel's most wicked king was named Manasseh. He reigned 55 years. 2 Kings 21:16 says, "Moreover, Manasseh shed innocent blood very much till he had filled Jerusalem from one end to another." In chapter 24, verse 4, we're told why God let foreign powers come in and defeat Manasseh. "Also for the innocent blood that he shed, for he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood," listen to this statement, "which the Lord would not pardon." There is such a thing as reaching a place where God says, you're at the point of no return. There is too much innocent blood. Just like the blood of Abel, who was murdered by his brother Cain, cried out to God from the ground, so the blood of innocent babies in America is continually crying out to the God of heaven. Do you know what they were doing in Manasseh's day? They were sacrificing their babies on fiery altars to false gods. One of the sites where this took place has been discovered in Israel. There it is in front of you. They burned their babies with fire. We burn our babies with saline solutions. They did it out of sight in secluded areas, away from the major population areas. We do it out of sight in the clinics. They did it on the altars of their false gods named Moloch and Chemosh and Baal. We do it on the altars of our false gods named women's rights and reproductive freedom and my career and my self-centered plans. It's interesting. 19 times innocent blood appears in the Bible. Only one time does it appear in the New Testament. And that was in relation to, can anybody tell me who? Judas. In Matthew chapter 27, verse 3 and 4, Judas, which had betrayed Jesus, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priest and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, what is that to us? See thou to that. That's your problem. The guilt that so many ladies have after aborting the innocent blood of their babies is the same guilt Judas felt for betraying Jesus Christ. One lady who had an abortion said she was tormented with nightmares and guilt for 11 long years. She said she couldn't hardly sleep at night for 11 years. This was on a nationwide radio broadcast this week, somebody was telling me about. She said it was nightmare after nightmare after nightmare. One day she finally knelt and confessed to God the sin of murder. And she said, God forgave me and gave me peace. For some time I've wondered, will God send a foreign power to overrun us as judgment for our national sin? He can and He may. But the truth is this, folks, God's judgment is already on us as a nation for this. Listen to these facts. Dr. Joel Brind announced on a national radio broadcast this week that several years of study confirmed that at least 30% of women who have abortions get breast cancer. One-third of every one out of every three ladies who has an abortion will get breast cancer. Also, the suicide rate of women after abortion is three times the general suicide rate and six times the rate that connected with birth. 6% of aborted women said it improved their lives. 61% said it made their lives worse. The biggest judgment may be taking place and we don't even recognize it. A political cartoon pictures it like this. A man says to God, God, why haven't you sent us people with cures for cancer and AIDS and answers to world hunger and all our social problems? And God said, I did. And a man says, but where are they? And God answers back, you aborted them. One of the most powerful speeches I have ever read in my life is the speech by Henry Hyde from the Congressional Record of September 19, 1996, in his plea to override President Clinton's veto of the partial birth abortion ban. He says, I'm going to read a few portions of it. Listen to it carefully. Mr. Speaker, in his classic novel, Crime and Punishment, the author has his murderous protagonist complain that man can get used to anything, the beast. He continues, in his memory, do you notice how man has gotten used to this? We must not get used to this. We can never rest. We must be like the great William Wilberforce, who fought slavery for year after year after year after year after year until finally he won. In his memoirs, Dwight Eisenhower wrote about the loss of 1.2 million lives in World War II, and he said, the loss of lives that might have otherwise been creatively lived scars the mind of the civilized world. Mr. Speaker, our souls have been scarred by 1.5 million abortions every year in this country. Our souls have so much scar tissue, there is not room for any more. While I believe in a merciful God, I believe in a just God, and I'd be terrified at the thought of having to explain at the final judgment why I stood unmoved while Herod's slaughter of the innocents was being reenacted right here in my own country. The queen of all euphemism is choice, as though one is choosing vanilla and chocolate instead of a dead baby or a live baby. Let the innocence of the unborn have the last word in this debate. Let their innocence appeal to what President Lincoln called the better angels of our nature. Carol Everett was an owner and operator of abortion clinics in Texas from 1977 to 1983. She was asked, what led to your getting out of the abortion industry? And she replied, it was definitely a religious conversion. As I travel and talk to post-abortive women, I have yet to meet a woman who is healed of her abortion experience without knowing our Lord Jesus Christ personally. Let me tell you what everybody needs. whoever you are, wherever you're from, everybody needs to know Jesus Christ personally. Whatever your sin, whatever your wrong, He will forgive you if you will call out to Him for salvation. But your baptism, your good works, your church membership will not suffice. You must confess that Jesus is Lord, that He has died on the cross, that He is the Savior, and ask Him to come into your heart, forgive you, and save you. Incidentally, about 4 years after I talked to that lady in my office, a person stopped me in the hallway at church, held up a little boy's picture and said, "Do you know who this is?" And I said, "I have no earthly idea." And they said, "His mother gave me this picture and asked me to show it to you." I said, "Cute little guy, about 4 years old. Why didn't she want me to see that picture?" She said, "If it weren't for your counsel, he wouldn't be alive. He's the little boy that was born after you told his mother it would be as much murder to kill her 3-year-old as it would be to kill her unborn child. She let him live. She's glad she did."